The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN. COLIN. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Draymond Green Show. This is episode 17, and boy, is it a big one. We've been processing this one for a while. Hope you caught that wordplay, processing it. Trying to make it happen. Schedules collide. It happens all the time. East Coast travel, West Coast travel. Sometimes can be hectic to put it together, but we got it done this week, and I am excited to welcome MVP candidate, five-time All-Star, The Process, Joel Embiid, to the show today. He will be our guest, and this interview, man, was it a good one. And I mean, what would you expect, though? It's Joel, who talks a bunch of shit to everybody and anybody. And then it's me who like to talk from time to time. And it's us having a conversation. So I thought it was great. I hope you all enjoy it and take away from it some of the things that I took away from it. I thought it was an incredible interview. But before we get to that, let's cruise around the association a little bit. Starting off with my return. Whew. It was incredible. But it was a blur. I mean, I was like, if you watch when I checked into the game, I actually didn't process that welcome back and ovation. I didn't process it at all. I was nervous as shit. Like, if you see me, like, go back and watch the clip and look how, like, watch how fast I'm, like, ripping my pants off and taking my shirt off. Like, I turn and then I just head straight for the free throw line. And Rui said something to me next to me. He said, man, I thought they were cheering for me. And I was so out of it, I started laughing like, yeah, they were. And I'm like, wait a minute. Ha, that was funny. Like, I mean, the nerves that I was feeling and getting back out there. You know, when coming off an injury, you can just never be too sure how it's going to go. So it's that, on top of not playing for a couple months, so on top of playing with Steph and Klay for the first time in 1,005 days. You know, it's all of that in one. And it was a blur. Like, it just was moving way too fast for me. Like, I mean, even with the ovation, like, most people would, like, stop and, like, wave or, like, acknowledge. I didn't even realize it. Like, it took me to get home last night, check my phone. I went to Twitter and like my first response to the ovation, if you go look at my Twitter page, I think I said like, wow. That's the first I had really even heard of it. Like I had no idea. And by the way, it was 2-3 a.m. by the time I saw it. Like I had no idea that was the case. And so I, most importantly, I want to say thank you to Dub Nation. I mean, that was incredible. It was something that I would remember for the rest of my life of what I do remember of it. But I mean, just to be welcomed back like that, I can't thank our fans enough. It was incredible. It was such an amazing night. Steph's birthday, to come back on Steph's birthday, it's obviously incredible. I said the other day in one of my interviews, like, no, this should be a very memorable birthday for him. Like, he scored 47. It's our first time playing in 1,005 days. Because 34 sucks. Like you turning 34. Like, that's no fun. It's like I turned 32 last week. Like, 32? Like, it's just one of those birthdays. And so, and 34 is even worse. Like, 34, you're, like, right on the cusp of having a big 35th. But not quite there. So it's like in reach, but not quite there. So it's boring as hell. But I think the birthday turned out great. Like, it was an incredible night. Steph dropped them boys off of 47, which was beautiful to see. Wish he could have gotten 50, but we came out the game the last minute and a half. And I have no doubt in my mind that he would have gotten 50 if we were still in the game. But, man, it was such an amazing night. I felt great for the most part. I think once I got to the end of my last 6-minute stretch, I got, you know, my win and get a little challenge in there. But for the most part, I felt pretty good. A couple times I'm dribbling down the court and I, like, just lose handle of the ball. Like, it's kind of a feel thing. And so I'm still getting my feel back. I feel like I'm at about 75% or something like that. And I have a month to get ready for the playoffs, and I have no doubt in my mind that I'll be back where I left off for the playoffs. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. I thought, you know, we did some really good things on the offensive end. I thought we did some really good things on the defensive end. And like I said, some of the moments that felt great to me, number one, Steph put me in the position as soon as I checked into the game to catch the ball on the post and hit him. Was incredible, because as soon as that happened, which was the very first play I was in, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, like, I felt normal after that. Like, I felt like, oh, I'm fine. Like, once that first thing happens, then from that point, it's just kind of like, all right, like, now it's just basketball. And so him putting me in that position was extremely important, because you start to run up and down the court a few times, 3, 4, 5 times, and nothing happened with you. And then that nervousness just starts to build and build and build and build, and it gets a little hectic. So I was extremely appreciative of that. And then I think it was just such a moment. Like, and so that moment really stood out to me. And then also another moment that really stood out to me was the backdoor cut dime for Clay in transition. That moment was beautiful to me because it was Steph and Clay right on top of each other. And then it was myself. And so that play kind of involved all of us. And so I thought that was, like, those were the two moments, like, two plays in the game that really stuck out to me. That moving forward, I'll remember those plays in that game. It was such a beautiful thing. So riding the 4-game win streak, which I think is great, especially off of that stretch of games that we had that I think we lost 9 out of 11. And so to see how the squad has bounced back from that and you know, pulled out some very tough wins, by the way, I thought that was a great show of character and resilience, because the reality is this team has not really gone through much. And, you know, I know most people will say, oh, well, they got championship experience. We got 4 guys with championship experience and then 11 or 12 guys with not much playoff experience at all. And so trying to get them to understand what it takes to win at this time in the season and moving forward is something that you have to really teach. And I think that's something that we needed to go to in order to figure it out. And I think, you know, we definitely showed that we're capable of figuring it out and putting it back together. So that's been beautiful to see. But yeah, man, I mean, and just wrapping up about the comeback. I mean, it was incredible. As I said in my press conference last night, I'm very thankful for Rick Celebrini and all the work that we put in to get back here. Man, it was not an easy road. Like, 4 weeks ago, I could barely run. Like, 2.5 weeks ago, I was, like, super excited to dunk a basketball. Like, literally to dunk the basketball. And so, like, what I had to go through to get back to that court, especially in the time that I did, it was hard. It was, I mean, super challenging, but very rewarding to know the work that I put in, that Rick and I dedicated ourselves to know that it brought me back here to do what I love with the guys that I love to take the court with every single night. And like I said, for the first time in 1,005 days, like, that's insane. And I could have never imagined that that would be our reality, but that is our reality. And, you know, the band is back together. And like I said last night, 2C, 3C, 7C, I don't give a damn. We went in the championship, and that's that. Also, not quite around the association, but in the basketball world, I know you may see I have on my Michigan State Spartan sweatshirt. This is not a coincidence. As you know, we have one show a week, and so this show has to live for the Michigan State Davidson Wildcat game. 7-10 matchup. My Spartans kind of let go of the rope a little bit down the stretch and ended up as a 7th seed when 3 weeks ago we were number one in the Big Ten. We end up as a 7th seed in the tournament. And so that's a story for another day. But my Spartan Dogs is going into Greenville, South Carolina, which is essentially a home game for Davidson. And we are going to destroy Steph Curry's Davidson Wildcats. And there will be some good bets. There will be a monetary bet. There will be a bet of Steph Curry walking into the game in the Sparty costume. No. Not just my jersey, not just a Michigan State t-shirt. He will come to a game as the Michigan State Spartan mascot. Sparty. That's what it's going to be. So I'm looking forward to that game. And so I had to wear this shirt just to let it be known. My Spartan Dogs is March. You know what they call Tom Izzo, Mr. March. You know how he gets it done at this time of year. And I don't think it's any different. Now, this year, now, the second round matchup that we have is Duke. And you know what Coach Izzo say? You give me the first game of the weekend, I'll get you the second one. And I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to get me the second one. I've actually never lost in the second weekend in the second game of a weekend. That is his thing. You give me the first one, I'll get you the second one. And he delivers. So goodbye, Davidson. Coach K, I got nothing but love for you, man. We won a gold medal together. Incredible. Great, great run. Congratulations to the legendary, the great Coach K. Such an honor I had to play for him in the 2016 Olympics. But Coach K, you must enjoy retirement after round two, my friend, because my Spartans, we getting it done, baby. That's what we do, Coach. But it's been a great run for you, Coach. And I am upset and sad that it has to end at the hands of my Spartans, Coach K. But it has to. And to all the Dookie Blue Devils out there, JT, Seth, I can go down the list. Kyrie, I can go down this list for days. Bet the money. My Spartans taking y'all down. So let me know what it is, all you Dookie Blue Devils. All you guys who, Zion, all you guys who showed up for the Coach K retirement game. Quinn Cook, by the way, I absolutely thought that was incredible of how everyone showed up. Like, that was amazing. Kudos to the Duke program. That was spectacular. But all you guys, I'm taking all the bets. Michigan State, round two, after we crushed Steph Curry's Davidson Wildcats. Holla at me. I need those bets. You know I'm always rolling with my Spartans.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. You'll know when you get it. It'll say eBay, authenticity, guarantee. You'll feel it because when it comes to your feet, eBay has your back. Maybe it's that head-turning pair for hooping or a hot new collab. Whatever you're after, when you cop on eBay, you can trust that your kicks will be checked by experts, not just any expert. Sneaker experts who live and breathe the culture. Real people with real hands-on authentication experience. That's when Blue Checkmark represents on our listing. eBay Authenticity Guarantee, meaning every inch, stitch, sole, logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. So when you finally step into those grill kicks, you'll realize the feeling is unlike any other. And with eBay Authenticity Guarantee, the feeling of real is always within reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Man, as I told y'all, that this next guest is one of the guys I'm most excited to speak with. I think when we're done playing basketball, we'll probably have a show together, and it's going to be the number one rated basketball show in the world. I'm just throwing that out there. Hopefully the big fella take the bait. But, man, I'm extremely excited to welcome five-time All-Star MVP front-runner candidate this year. And was an MVP candidate last year, arguably could have been MVP last year as well. But really excited to welcome this guy, man, a guy who I be locking up, that outweighs me by 80 pounds. He's got me about 6 or 7 inches. Joel Embiid, welcome to the Draymond Green Show, my brother. I appreciate you coming on. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I can't complain, man. First game back. I'm feeling great, bro. I'm so excited to be back out there on the floor, man. I've never been through, and I know you is someone that definitely understands it even more than I do. I've never really been through an injury that kept me out that long. Like, I was out for 11 weeks. Like, I've had some injuries that I needed to rehab, but they were all over the summer. And so I've never been through an injury that kept me out that long in a season, man. It's brutal.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, when you think about it, I missed my first 3 years because of injury. Obviously, you know, they also kept me out longer than, you know, he was supposed to, just because they wanted to make sure that I was right. But mm-hmm. It sucks. For you said it was 11 weeks. For me, really 3 years. So, yeah. And especially coming out of college. So you lose, you know, those first 3 years of experience that you can get in that time, and it does suck.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. It gave me a totally different appreciation for what guys like yourself went through, what Zion Williamson is going through, what Klay Thompson went through. Like, it gave me such a deeper appreciation. Week two, I'm like, all right, man, like, This is crazy. Like, we in here 6 hours just in the weight room doing, like, core strength. Like, what are we doing, man? It's crazy.
At some point, it doesn't make sense because you're going every single day. Obviously, you do a bunch of exercises every single day. But sometimes it's the same thing. And, like, it gets annoying. Like, I remember my first year. So I was doing rehab all the time. And then You know, they had me, you know, they wanted me to sit on the bench and travel with the team and all that stuff. And we were, that was at the time where, you know, we were losing a lot every single game. So like I had to go through that. Then, you know, having to go through, you know, rehab every single single day mentally is already tough. And then you got to sit on the bench and watch the losing going into the game and knowing that you don't have, like, your team doesn't have a chance to win the game. So you probably going to watch losses after losses. Like, he was, like, mentally, like, you got to be extremely strong.
Absolutely. I think for me, I hadn't sat on the bench most of the games I was out. I sat on the bench one game, and two games the entire time that I missed. Obviously, you know, we have a much better team, but I think what people don't realize, when you're going through rehab, you're on a totally different schedule than the team. You're there way earlier than them, because you need to get your rehab in before they come in prepping for the game or prepping for practice or whatever it is. You're then there way later than them. And to then ask a guy, like, yo, by the way, we want you to sit on the bench. That's your whole day gone.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I thought, for me, that was a big thing where they didn't make me sit on the bench. And it was good for me. But And speaking of your injury and essentially missing the bulk of your first 3 years, and then following those 3 years, you then go on and sign a 5-year, $148 million rookie extension. What did that tell you, that the team was willing to bet on you like that, and you probably had played all the 50 games leading up to that?
Man, I remember when my agent at the time, I don't have an agent anymore, but my agent at the time was Leon Rose. He came up to me. He's like, yeah, they want to, you know, resign you. They want to give you, you know, 5 years, $150 million or whatever that was. I was like, what are you talking about? I haven't played basketball. Like, I played 31 games in 3 years. And, like, we're talking about, you know, a max deal. Like, and I only played 31 games. And then he started going over it. He's like, yeah, but they want to put, you know, all these protections and all that stuff. Like, this amount is guaranteed. I was like, I don't care how much is guaranteed. I'm signing whatever, because, like, this is insane. Like, they're giving me $150 million after playing 31 games. I was like, yo, they got to be crazy. Like, and that was still at the point where, like, really, that was my fourth year or fifth year playing basketball. Really, but when I started playing in the NBA, that was really my, you know, second year, because I had missed, you know, those 3 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at that point, I never really believed in myself at that point where, like, you know, people always saw something different in me than I did. Like, at that point, I was like, I'm not even that good. Like, I don't know what they're seeing in me, but, like, if they're gonna give me this amount of money and I'm not from here, I'm from Cameroon, like, yeah, I gladly steal it, because I don't know what's gonna happen in the future. Like, you know, I just missed 2 years, and, you know, everybody's talking about he's never gonna play in the NBA. Like, he's already missed 2 years. They're talking about, you know, all the, you know, bus, you know, in past history and all that stuff. You know, all these bad stories coming out, you know, about me, whether it was the weight and all that stuff. And it was at the wrong time too, because that was at the time where I had just lost my little brother when I had to go back to Cameroon. So, you know, all that stuff was, like, it was crazy. And, you know, when, you know, he came up to me, he's like, yeah, this is the deal. You know, they're going to get to this amount of money. I'm like, Leon, I don't care. Like, whatever they're guaranteed, I'm taking it, because I don't know what's about to happen. Like, I'm, like, reading into, like, what all these people are saying about me. Like, I don't even believe in myself. I don't know how good I am and how good I'm going to be. So I was like, yo, like, I don't even want to fight it. Like, I was like, just do whatever you have to do.
That's incredible, man. I have a couple questions, follow-ups on a couple of things you just said. Number one, talk to me about not believing in yourself, because from what we've seen, is, and it's funny that you say that, and I have interest in this because I too, you know, I'm not bashful at all, just like yourself. Like, if I have something to say, I'm going to say it, like yourself. Yeah. And I think one thing, you exude confidence. Like, when anyone see you, you exude, like we know, like, Joel, not only is Joel good, but Joel think he's going to bust your ass, like, no matter who you are. But to then go on to say you didn't believe in yourself, like, walk me through that journey for someone as confident as yourself to then lose confidence and say, give me anything. I don't believe in me. So give me whatever they're going to give me. I'll take it.
So I take you to the timeline. So think about, so your whole life, you know, I went to, you know, obviously school. I was really good at school. I never really thought I didn't start playing basketball until I was 16. So before that, I was playing, you know, soccer. I was playing volleyball. So, and I was actually at around, you know, 16 years old, I was about to actually go to France to try to become a professional volleyball player. Until Luke Bamute came back to Cameroon, and he had a camp, and which, you know, a camp I didn't even want to go to because I had just started playing basketball like 3 months before that. So I was like, yo, I'm not good enough. Like, you know, these guys, they've been playing basketball their whole lives, and like, there's no way I'm going to get picked for his camp. And then I went over there, and, you know, like I said, like, people always saw, you know, something different than I saw in myself, and he ended up giving me that opportunity. So I get to the U.S. I went to Montverde Academy. That whole year, like, I was practicing with the JV team and the senior team, but I was playing JV. I don't know if you've seen the clip of me. If I don't know if you look at it, that's a funny clip. So that throwing the ball, and then I just run out of bounds, like, taking out the rim, like, I didn't even know where I was. Like, that was my first year in America. Like, that was like, you know, 7 months, you know, playing basketball, and, you know, I was playing JV and all that stuff. And I didn't really get the chance to really show what, you know, like, what I could do, if I could even do anything, you know, my junior year. So I had to transfer to another school, the Box School, that was still in Florida. And then I get there, I got the opportunity, and then people started recruiting me. I get to Kansas. The first practice, it wasn't really a practice. It was like a scrimmage that we had. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, I was a freshman. We had a Tariq Black. It was like a senior transfer from Memphis. You know, people were watching. The women's team was watching. He dunked on me so hard. I was like, I'm not ready for this. Like, there's no way. So I go to Coach Self's office. I'm like, Coach, like, I can't do this. Like, I need to redshirt. Like, and that was at the time I thought I was going to be in college for, like, you know, 5 years. And, like, I really didn't think I had the potential to be in the NBA because my whole goal coming to America was to use this basketball opportunity to try to get a degree and make something out of my life and go back home and, you know, make money and help my family and all that stuff. So I never believed that, you know, I had any chance in basketball or whatever. So I told him, and then he's like, you kidding me? You're going to be the number one pick in 2 years. And then I'm like, I've always, like, before I got to college, I was always told that, you know, coaches lie all the time. And then I'm like, this dude, he's just lying to my face. No way. I'm not believing whatever he's saying. So we go on. Obviously, I went to school with wigs. And one thing that people don't know is that I'm always going to be so thankful for him because when we went to college, he has so much hype and so much attention. Like, he was crazy. Like, people were like, he's pretty good at what he does. But at that time, they were like, he's the next LeBron James. Like, he's going to be better than them. So, like, he has so much hype, and everybody just wanted to come watch him. Like, scouts, like, Like, we always had so many scouts, and I guess I was kind of also using that opportunity to show them, you know, what I could do. So when they would come in the gym, like, I would be randomly walking on, you know, a Akeem Dream Shake, and like show them that, yeah, I got it. And, you know, they started seeing that in me. And then obviously you get to the league and, you know, the foot injury, you got to miss a couple of years. And like I mentioned, the stories are coming out, and my brother died. So like, I really lost all the confidence, because I'm like I don't know what to do. Like, I even thought about like giving up on basketball, because I, you know, my brother died and all that stuff. And, you know, but going back to your question, is like, the first moment that I thought that I had a chance wasn't until I stepped on the basketball NBA floor for the first time, my third year against OKC. I stepped on the floor, you know, Steven Adams was guarding me and all that stuff. I scored a bucket, my first bucket, and then I was like, hey, this is easy. Like, we ended up losing the game, but like, that's where like the culture completely changed in Philly. Like, all these losing years before me, there was so much excitement. People were like going crazy. They were like, oh, it's about to change. And then I was like, wow, like the attention that I'm getting, and you know what I was, I think I scored like 22 points in like 26 minutes my first game. I'm like, I was on minimum restrictions the whole year, but I'm like, you know, this is easy. Like, I can do this. And then that's where, like, you know, we, you know, back in the day when I used to be going crazy on Twitter and all that stuff and talking to other guys, that's where I felt it, because I'm like, yo, like it's easy. And like my personality is also that I like to talk trash. Like, I like to like show that I'm better than, you know, everybody else. And, you know, that's why, like, you know, I was going crazy on Twitter, whoever I was playing against, you know, whether it was talking trash or, you know, kicking the ass on the floor. Like, it was fun. But that's where I really found out that, yeah, like, it's easy. I got a chance.
So for those of y'all out there, let me take you into the mind of these superstars, and it's filled with irrational confidence, which is what it ends up making these guys superstars. If y'all didn't hear him, he scored his first basket, and then in his mind, from the first basket on, it's been easy ever since. And the reality is, it has been, but there's only a select few of guys in this league that can really reach that type of irrational confidence. And so when you go around the league, you see certain guys being called superstars, and they're not. Like, the reality is, there aren't a bunch. There aren't more than 10 superstars in the NBA, Joel being one of them. And that's 10 is probably a bit strong. And that term gets tossed around so loosely. But to take you guys in the mind of a superstar, because I have had the opportunity to play with a few of them, it's like irrational confidence. Like, I scored one time, and then at that point, it was easy to me. And so I just want to make sure y'all understand the mindset of these dudes and how insane it is. And that's why it's only a few of those guys. But... And going back, so you go through that entire journey. You go to the 76ers, and I thought you made one of the most genius moves when it came to Philadelphia as a city and when it came to the 76ers as an organization. And all these teams has something that they go by, some slogan that they're kind of where their season is or where their team is that they're going to build on throughout the year. Ours has been strength in numbers and blah, blah, blah. And the 76ers was the process. Embrace the process. You then took that name and made it your nickname, say, I'm the process. What made you do that? Because I thought that was genius. And to me, it felt like once you did that, everybody else in that city, everybody else in that fan base, everybody else in the organization was like, oh, there's our guy right there. I thought that was genius. What made you do that?
There was a couple of things. The first thing was, obviously, I got drafted by Sam Hinkie. And, you know, he's the reason why, you know, we were able to, whether it's draft me or have this many picks and all that stuff, you know. And then I got to the league, and my second year, it was basically forced out by, I don't want to say names, but, you know, I'm outspoken, so I say it, by the NBA. I would say, I don't know, but I think that's what it was. And then, you know, that pissed me up because I felt like, yeah, sure, there was a lot of losing, which I wasn't part of because that was before I started playing. But I knew that eventually, once I started playing, it was going to change, which it did. So they basically forced him out, and I didn't like it. And then during the time, the process didn't actually start with me, but I was like, you know what? Around that time, the league did not like the process because it was a bunch of losing. Like, they say it was, like, tanking. You know, they were losing on purpose, which in the NBA, like, no one loses on purpose. Like, you're not going to put NBA players out there and tell them that go lose a basketball game. Like, they're going to go out and they're going to do their best. And sometimes, most of the time, like, if you're not talented enough in the NBA, you're going to freaking lose if you're playing against, you know, more talented players. So you're not going to put guys out there and tell them that you're going to lose. So to me, they weren't losing on purpose. So I got pissed off because, you know, they ran Sam Hinkie out of town, and I knew that they didn't like the process, all the losing stuff. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to piss some people off. Like, even around the team, like, there was a bunch of people that didn't like that award. Like, I remember, like, I won't say names, but I used to get calls about, like, can you please start your one, not to mention, you know, the process name. Like, we're trying to move on from it. And I was like, all right, watch this. So that's why I started pushing the agenda about, like, you know what? I'm going to support my man because he drafted me. He had, you know, coming out of college, before I got drafted, like, he believed in me. I was hurt, but he still believed in me. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to support him too. That's why I took on, you know, that whole process thing to try to, you know, try to keep what he was doing and really show them that, like, yeah, like, we got power. Like, it doesn't matter if they don't want to talk about the process or if they want to forget about it. Like, players, you know, have a lot of power when they speak. And I started understanding that. That's why I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep pushing that. And that's why I stuck.
Wow, that's incredible. And not surprising that you picked that to piss people off, because that's what you do. not surprising at all. But and speaking of the process and speaking of you pissing people off, because that's what you do, and you even mentioned it yourself, you were going crazy on Twitter, like, crazy. One of the things that you did to me that stood out the most, and, like, you were one of my favorite followers when you were going ape shit on Twitter and Instagram, and one of the things that I absolutely loved that you did was when you would do the location.
Yeah.
And the location was whoever you had just dropped off that night.
Yeah.
And one that really stood out to me, because people look at the NBA today and they tend to forget, like, how stuff has turned over. And at that time, Andre Drummond was a starting center in the NBA. He was an all-star center in the NBA. Y'all were in the same conference. And you're just now starting to make your name.
Yeah.
And you put Andre Drummond's head. And then your caption was like, I own real estate in your hair for free, or something like that you said. Like, and I'm like, yo, this dude is out of his mind. And then that kind of started this beef amongst you and Andre Drummond.
But by the way,
by
the way, it wasn't a beef. I was always, you know, that's, you know, we were on the same team and all that stuff, but I always kicked his ass. Like, he never had any chance.
Hey, so check this though. When he decided that he was going to come to y'all team, I was kind of like, huh? And then I saw the video. Then I saw the video of him arriving at the arena, at the facility once he signed. And you kind of turned and shook him up and kind of went back to watch. And I was just thinking to myself, like, what is going through his head right now? Is he really feeling like I own this man right now? Like, you just came to back me. What was going through your... I have to know. I need to know what was going through your head when he decided he was going to sign with y'all. I mean, the reality is it helped his career because he's revitalized his career and backing you up and now going to Brooklyn and he's playing incredible basketball in Brooklyn. So it worked. But what were you thinking?
Well, I say this thing. So I think most of the time, like, you know, I talk trash or in the past when I used to like really go at it with, you know, anybody, whether it was Whiteside or Drum or whoever, you know, to me, it's never been, you know, serious to the point where, like, I don't hate anybody. Like, I'm like, I'm doing this for fun. Like, if people get their feelings hurt, that is on them. Like, that has nothing to do with me. Anything that I say and anything that I do, I'm not kidding. So let's say whenever I'm about to send a tweet, before I even send a tweet, I'm in my kitchen or my living room just dying because I know that people are going to go crazy, whether they're going to take it seriously or whether they're going to think that it's funny. I'm already so done. And then when I send a tweet, I'm like crying because I'm like, that's what people love or whatever. But at that time, like, I was like, when he signed with us, I was happy because I'm like, yo, like, when you look at, you know, the previous years, like, you know, every single time that I went off the floor, we always lost leads. You look at game 7 against Toronto when we lost that series. I played, you know, 46 minutes. We were, plus 3 or whatever when I was on the floor. And then in the 2 minutes that I sat, we were minus 10. So, like, to me, my mind, I was like, when we signed him, I was like, I just need, like, a competing, like, someone who's not going to come off the, who's not going to come on the floor and just lose leads. So I was like, you know, it fits, you know, what we need. And, you know, I was fine with it. But, you know, if you're looking at the video that you were talking about, it was really nothing. I was just, you know, walking out. I was lifting, doing my thing. And I greeted him. I said, you know, welcome to Philly. But then again, you know, in my mind, I could never forget, you know, the old days, you know, when I used to go out there. And, I remember posting that video of him dancing after I gave him, like, that was after the game. So about that story. So we go, before that game, we go to Detroit. We lost that game, but I had like 30 and 10. And then he ended up getting ejected or whatever. But after the game, he was talking crazy. He's like, that man is out of shape. He can't run. I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, no, you just won, but I just had 30 on you and I'm out of shape. Watch what I'm about to do to you. So I'm like, the next meeting was a couple weeks later. I'm like, you don't know what's coming. So in that next meeting, I had like 32 in the first half. I was going at him. He was in foul trouble. I was going. I was like, but I had 32 in the first half. I was like killing him. He was up by a lot and all that stuff. That's what I remember. You texted me after the video that I posted. You were like, yo, you crazy.
And then like, crazy, oh,
that's what I do. Like, I had a location, like, crazy, like, you know, like, I own a lot of real estate and all that stuff. But that's me. Like, for me, it's fun. Like, he's never, he's never, like, serious where to the point where I'm like, I hate this man. Like, I don't want to be around this man. Like, I'm like, I never take it personal. Like, I'm like, bro, he stays on the court. And that's it. After we get off the court, if you want to, you know, talk to me or whatever, unless you say something disrespectful to me, other than that, like, I will never be disrespectful to anybody, whether it's, you know, going overboard and all that stuff. So I know where to draw the line. But other than that, like, it's funny to me. Like, I just go with the vibe, man. I just love it.
That's incredible, man. I appreciate that about you because I'm the same way. I talk a bunch of junk. It's never personal.
Like, you know, you playing basketball. It was personal when you were talking to Paul Pierce. That was personal.
No, that actually was like right off the top of the dome, man. Because I'm going to tell you what happened. I'm going to tell you what happened with that. So we're playing. And at that time, Doc is obviously with the Clippers. And yeah. We're playing. And, you know, for us coming up, like, you know, the NBA go in waves. So the Clippers, when we were really young, the Clippers were supposed to be the next team out the West. You know, like, they were the next young guys coming. And we like, hold on. We don't really believe in them. We got something to say about this. And so it kind of, you know, this rivalry started budding against two young teams, us against them, Steph against CP. And, like, at that time, Blake is the guy. You know, like, Blake is like, they trying, they hyping Blake.
Yeah, he's the next face of the league.
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm clamping that. Like, I ain't feeling that. And so then, you know, me and Blake had our situations. We had one where we at half court. He grabbed my side. I elbowed him in the throat. I get kicked out the game. He go back in the game. Bogey got him a second tech. He got kicked out. And, like, all of this stuff keep happening every time we play them, right? And so then Pierce come over to the team towards the end of his career, last 2 years, I think, or whatever it was. And now me and Blake Griffin already got a thing. Like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And Pierce yells from the bench, "Go at him, BG. He too little. Go at him, BG. Too little. He can't guard you." And so I'm like, fuck out of here. Go back down the court, whatever. We come back down. They go at me again. "Go at him, BG. He can't guard you. Too small." So now I'm like, right? And he like, shot fake. I go flying trying to beat the shit. And I fouled him. And I'm number one, why am I going for a Blake Griffin pump fake? Like, Blake shoot the ball now. But at that time, Blake wasn't shooting the ball like that. And so I'm like, why am I even going for a Blake? So now I'm fuming because I just picked up a foul and a pump fake I had no business going for. And I really went for this pump fake because you over there talking. And like, I'm trying to beat this shot so I can say something to you. And I fouled and I got really pissed. Like, wow, you just made me foul him. So I'm walking back to the bench. I'm walking to the free throw line. And he like, "Yeah, BG, I told you he can't guard you." And I'm like, all right, bro, I had enough. And that's why I'm like, hey, bro, you chasing this farewell tour. Like, you're not Kobe. Like, why are you doing this? If you retiring, go home. Like, ain't nobody doing no farewell tour for you and, like, making this whole, like, Kobe different, bro. Like, that's Kobe. Yeah. Like, D-Wade, that's D-Wade. Like, Pierce, you had a great career, Hall of Fame career, but stop, bro. Like, you ain't getting no tour. And so it just came right off the top of the dome. Like, bro, you think you Kobe? Like, you ain't getting no farewell tour. Shut up. And I was really, fuming. But I tell you what, man, I never expected that when I said that to take on the life that it did.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of young kids that remember Paul Pierce more for that moment than what Paul Pierce really was. And the reality is, it's unfortunate.
He was a great player.
He was the truth. Like, he didn't get that. He didn't get that nickname by mistake. Like, he was the truth. But a lot of young kids, a lot of people remember him for that moment. And I think it was such a big moment. Number one, the microphone caught it, but it was involving Kobe. And then, you know, like, God rest Kobe. So once Kobe passed away and like, what happened to everybody, how it shook the world, that statement never rang more true. Like, when Kobe passed away, everybody started blowing my Instagram up, like, often, like, Kobe anniversary and stuff. Like, my Instagram blow up often from that moment. Like, it never rang true because, I mean, look at that. Like, we all know the reaction. We all know how it affected all of us. And so the story never rang more true.
One thing I didn't mention, Kobe is the reason why I started playing basketball. So
really?
Yes. I was watching, that was around 14, and I was watching the finals, Lakers against Boston, and I ended up winning that series. That's the first time I watched, NBA basketball and all that stuff. And then I was like, Kobe was killing. I'm like, hey, I want to be like him. Like, this is crazy. Like, and then, but at that time, my dad didn't want to let me play basketball because he thought it was too physical. Which nowadays it doesn't make sense because I travel, being physical and showing my physicality against whoever I'm playing against. And then it was like, no. And then one of my uncles had to, he had to start trying to convince him to let me play basketball. And that's how I started watching the Lakers and Kobe. That's why I was such a big, Kobe fan. And it hit me hard, when that happened.
Absolutely, man. It was tragic for sure. But I want to ask you this question, and I more so want to ask you this question. In me doing this media thing, one thing I hate about media is how they try to stir controversy. I think it's unnecessary. I think it's pathetic. But I want to ask you a question about this situation for my own personal sake. And what I want to ask you is, with the Ben situation, I feel like at times we get thrusted into this position of like where you're almost defending the team. Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of that happened to you in the Ben Simmons situation, because the reality is this. I think some of it happened in the Russ KD situation. Like, we see it often. It's not like it was just you and Ben. It happens all the time. And the reality is, I think we lose sight, and ultimately, like with you and Ben, like you express your dismay with the situation. You express like, get them out of here then. Like, you express all of that. But there was a point.
I never said that to get him out of there. I just didn't understand what was going on. Honestly, like I didn't understand like what happened and what led on to that whole situation. To this day, I don't understand. When you look at, and I don't have any problems with him. Like I said, like obviously we didn't win a championship together, but in the regular season we were dominant every single season, 50 win seasons. Like I always believed that we had a chance to win together. Like I always believe it, even to this day, I believe that we had a chance to win, and what we were able to accomplish. Obviously, winning matters the most, but I feel like, we had a chance, and that's why I don't understand, what was going on, honestly. What caused, him to want to leave? I understand, his explanation, but, a lot of things don't make sense.
Do you think your press conference after game 7, was it? Do you think that had any effect on him?
I don't think it did. Because, but this is what we, you're a member of the media and all that stuff, but this is what, this is what you just mentioned, that they're always going to try to pick up little stuff just to make them, look right, or just to cause like controversy and all that stuff. If you look at the whole press conference, they asked me a question, what happened? What happened? Like, what caused this loss? And then I literally mentioned a bunch of events that happened. I mentioned, where it really started. And, I was being honest. Like, we all, like me and you, like, I say what I want to say. And I'm not going to, just hold myself just because I got to, make people feel better. And I feel like I didn't hurt anybody's feelings. I mentioned, I was like, obviously the pass up dunk. I didn't even mention that. I said, we missed an opportunity, and then I actually called out Matisse for missing the free throw. And then I was like, I didn't call out by his name. I was like, we missed the free throw. And then I called out a bunch of events that happened after we had a, you know, we fired a three-point shooter. And then I mentioned me turning the ball over when we were down four at that point. They ended up scoring in the fast break, which, you know, pushed the lead up to 6 points. I mentioned a bunch of other events where we made a mistake. I mentioned myself, but you know, the media is going to be the media. They all pick, you know, that one part where I said we passed up, you know, a layup and we missed the free throw and all that. So which doesn't make sense. I didn't call out anybody specifically. I just listed a bunch of events that happened that led to us. Because at that point, the score was tied. We were down by one at that point when we missed the free throw. And then I called out a bunch of events that happened after, but they just had to pick, you know, that one part where it seemed like I was calling someone out when I wasn't really to. And I was talking about, like, the sequence of, you know, the events that happened.
For sure. And I think as a leader, one of the things that I do respect is you calling out yourself and saying, oh, I had too many turnovers, and especially that one down the stretch. Like, as a leader, you have to be able to do that. And I have the utmost respect for that, because I think that's very important. And it's also very important that you can talk about your teammates as well. Like we all go through it.
It's never personal. Like, even this year, like, you look at, you know, my press conference with Tyrese, like when he's not taking shots or he's missing shots or he's not taking wide open shots, I'm like, yo, I'm calling him out. I'm like, you gotta be better. But like, as teammates, and because we're so close off the court, he understands that I want him to be better, not just for me, but for the whole team and for himself, because I understand, you know what it takes to win. I haven't won, but I feel like I have an idea of what it takes to win. You know, I've lost, you know, on a buzzer beater when we had a great team. And, you know, who knows? We could have had a chance to win a championship or play you guys in the finals that year. So, like, I feel like I have an idea of what it takes to win, but I haven't gotten there. So, like, and as you know, you can't win alone. I can't win 1-on-5. Like, that's impossible. Like, I need my teammates' help. So, like, when I'm calling out, whether it's, you know, Matisse or Tyrese, like, they know that it's not personal. They just know that I just care about them, and I want to win so bad that, like, you know, I just want them to be better, and they understand that. And, you know, it's never personal.
Now, 100%. And I must say something to you. We've had this conversation on the podcast before, where I was speaking about winning and losing. And you don't know what it takes to win a championship because you haven't won a championship. You know what it takes to win. Yep. Because simply, just because you, it's hard to win a championship, man. Like, people don't realize all of the things that has to go right. Yes. In order to win a championship. Like, it's not just about who got the most talent or who had the best year. It's so many things that have to go right. And so I would love to correct you here. And you know how to win. You've won since you've been healthy. You've won. Like, you know how to win. Winning a championship is a different thing that takes a bunch of things to align in order for that thing to actually happen. And the guy who I was talking about was Chris Paul, because people say Chris Paul isn't a winner. Fuck out of here. Chris Paul is a winner. Chris Paul is one of the better winners in our game. Chris Paul just has not won a championship. But Chris Paul has won over and over and over and over and over again. And you've done the same thing, and you're still very young. So don't get caught up in that whole, I think I know what it takes. You know what it takes to win. You've done everything it does to take to win. And the reality is this. Y'all lost on one of the most impossible buzzer beaters in NBA history to go to the NBA Finals, if I'm not mistaken.
No, second one.
To go to the conference finals. And then y'all would have faced who?
Milwaukee.
That's a matchup that could go either way. You know what I'm saying? And that's also not the Milwaukee with Jrue Holiday. Yeah. That's a totally different Milwaukee team.
Yep.
And so it's the margin for error is this small. Like, it's not like like, you really were right there. And then say you do get through Milwaukee, because that was the same Milwaukee team, and now you're playing a beat down Golden State Warriors. Like, yeah. And so it's really that small, and I hope you don't get caught up in, I have not won a championship, and I'm not winning. That's bullshit. It's hard to win a championship in this league. And so don't get caught up in that.
I understand that. I understand that, because I've gotten to the second one, you know, so many times. And, you know, like, and you got to be so strong mentally, because if you're not, I've gone to the second one, you get to, like, game four, you're like, damn, you still got, like, conference finals and finals. You got another couple games, like, freaking 15 games that you got to play or whatever. Like, I'm like, you got to be mentally strong, because the playoffs are draining. Even the second one that I've gotten, I'm like, man, like, if I don't, you know, keep doing, or if I don't take care of my body, like, you're not going to make it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the most important things. And by the way, the whole taking care of your body thing, it takes time to learn that.
Yeah. Like, it took me a lot of time.
The way you take care of your body, it may be differently than what I need to take care of my body, right? It takes time to figure that, and time. And so, like, it's all coming together for you, bro. And I can sit here and talk to you for another hour, and I would love to, but in respect for your time, I'm going to just ask a couple more questions and let you go. I know you're
not
going to prepare for a game.
We got time.
Okay. But, okay. And speaking of the Ben trade and with Brooklyn, y'all brought in James Harden. A James Harden, who a lot of people has wrote off and said he's out of shape and he's declined and he's no longer the James Harden that we once knew, only to see him reignite or come in with you guys and look just like the James Harden we all knew before. How is that? And I've seen that you said, man, I get more open shots than I've ever gotten. Like, how has that partnership been working out for y'all? And where do you see y'all as far as duos in the NBA? Where do y'all rank?
Well, that's not on me to figure that, you know, where we ranked and all that stuff. Like, at this one, like, really, like, I'm really just focused on, you know, finding ways out to, you know, get better every single day. And then obviously, since we had him, we added him, like, he just provides, you know, something that we really never had since I got to Philly. So that's a welcome sight. And he's been great. And I think all of us, and especially him, he's still trying to figure it out, you know, how to help everybody. But, you know, it's James Harden. I told him, like, I don't care what anybody says. Like, just be yourself. Like, freaking go score the ball, be a playmaker. He's been a lot. He's been, you know, trying to playmake a lot. But at times, like, I also wanted to be aggressive and look for his own shot and all that stuff. But, I mean, from all the stories that you hear out there, is completely different. I mean, fun guy to be around, you know, positive energy always, you know, since he got here, you know, you feel like, you know, and like you said, it's all about timing. And, you know, some situations are different than others. I don't know what happened over there. Maybe it wasn't the best situation. And I would imagine that he put a lot of thoughts into, you know, really making that decision, because you're living, you know, a team with freaking Kevin Durant. Like, you know, yeah. Kevin Durant, like, you play with him, you know how good he is. And, you know, I always say that, you know, like, I really believe in myself as far as, like, you know, talented and what I can do on the basketball floor. Especially skills when it comes to, you know, my size and all that stuff. Like, if there is one guy that I think, you know, for the size and, you know, what, you know, we're able to do on the floor, that's the one guy that I'm like, yeah, he's more talented than me, because the guy is 7 feet and he can do everything on the basketball court and even better than I can. But, you know, James has been great. I think we got a chance to, you know, maybe meet you guys in, you know, in the finals, but we got a long way to go. We're not where we're supposed to. We still working on a lot of things that we got to correct, whether it's defensively And then offensively trying to find, you know, trying to make sure that we all succeed and all that stuff. But ultimately, I think, you know, we got a couple of games to really get on the same page and we'll be fine.
No doubt. I think it's been beautiful to watch as a fan of basketball, like to watch y'all two out there together and young Tyrese Maxey
Tyrese has been amazing.
Mm-hmm. I feel like his growth, to me, he's kind of like a wild card for y'all. Like, you know, still really young. So it's hard to get a consistent 20-25 from a guy in his second year in the NBA. Like, that's a very hard thing to do.
That's to learn to do that night to night. That's why he should be the most improved, you know, player this year. So
I respect that. But I mean, we'll see. But I like how it's coming together for y'all. And then obviously, I think, you know, Doc is one of the better coaches in our league. And so I'm interested to see. And hopefully we will meet y'all in the finals. Because as you know, like nobody else in this league, I'm locking that shit up. So
whatever. That's why you need a double team every time we play, y'all.
That's crazy. I never asked for a double team. That's not even in my makeup.
I always find myself to be double every single time I play against you.
Hey, if you want to duck in like Shaq, you get 2 feet in the paint, the double team got to come, big fella. Like, I mean, at that point, you got to go for what you know. You know what I'm saying? But,
if you say that you're that good of a defender, I mean, I don't know. I've never asked for a double team in my life. So
me either. That ain't me.
And I think I'm a pretty good defender, especially when I'm on.
When we put you in every pick and roll and they bring you up to blitz because you can't get, you know, you just like blitz it because you can't get up the floor. That's kind of like asking for a double team essentially on the other end.
You want me to play? You want me to play drop against Steph Curry?
No, you don't got to be dropped, but you ain't got to blitz it.
I wasn't blitzing last time. I was just trying to make sure we got the ball out of his hands. You can make plays because you can't shoot the basketball.
Hey, but I make every other play. And I hope leave me open down the stretch. I'm going to can your ass.
But would I rather make Stephen Curry or you beat us? I take you any single day.
Hey, man, many has succumbed to that mindset, brother. Many has succumbed to that mindset. But check this out. I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you about the MVP conversation with you and Joker right up there at the top. I don't think there's a wrong answer, but how are you feeling about that? Where do you feel like you're at right now, and what do you think has to happen for you to close it out this year?
First of all, Jokic is amazing.
Yes, he is.
He's a master. You not only play against him twice a year, but you get to play against him, you know, four times a year or even more in the playoffs. That's a potential mm-hmm. matchup for you guys. You know how good he is, and I know how good he is because, you know, I'm also happy that big guys are dominating the league. When you look at whether it's me, him, Giannis, mm-hmm. You know, it's good to see. Nothing against you guys, you Americans, but it's also good to see foreign people, you know, coming, you know, in America and just dominate you guys at your own sport. So that's good to see, but he's a monster. But I did a lot of, you know, campaigning for myself for MVP last year, which, you know, could have gone either way. Like, if I would have stayed healthy, and it could have gone either way. But I was also happy that he won. You know, and you know, this year, you know, I feel like, you know, I took my game to even higher level than I did last year. And the knock on me last year was, you know, I didn't stay healthy mm-hmm. For enough games, which, you know, they're probably going to use that against you too when it comes to defensive player of the year. But, you know, this year, what more can you ask? You know, mm-hmm. Production went higher. You know, I stayed healthy. And, you know, and we had a lot of drama. But you can say that about a lot of teams. But, you know, that whole situation was it was extremely draining. It was tough to go through it, especially, you know, every single day being asked about the same questions and the same subject all the time. It was very annoying. But like I said, like, you know, everything just speaks for itself. You know, like you said, there is no right or wrong answer. You know, he's a monster. You know, but I feel like I've also put myself in a position to, you know, where I deserve it. And it is my time. But like I said, it's up to you guys, you the media.
Well, I don't got that kind of vote. I wish I did have that vote. I think I could possibly vote better than some other folks, but yeah. I ain't got that vote yet.
No, yeah, but I'm saying your media friends, it's up to you, you know, who deserves it or who's going to win it. But, you know, winning a championship matters to me a lot. So if I were to not win it and win a championship, even better. So,
absolutely.
But then again, you know, we all have egos. Like, you want to win a bunch of Defensive Player of the Year in your career, just like I want to win a bunch of MVPs and Defensive Player of the Year in my career. Like, at some point, like, you know, yeah, like it would be cool to, you know, do both too, especially at the same time.
Hey, man, you ain't winning no Defensive Player of the Year blitz and stuff. They don't blitz with Rudy Gobert.
Hold on. Well, and that's why Steph always freaking kills him. And you're not playing. Because you cannot play drop against freaking Steph Curry. And by the way, we had that conversation about, you know, how to figure out who's a great defender and who's not. So, like, to me, it's like, I don't know. Who's the favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year this year?
I'm not sure. I stopped keeping up with it once I got hurt.
You,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, what would be your criteria to figure it out, you know, who wins the awards? Let's say Defensive Player of the Year. You got to have, a top 10 defense, right? At least.
I think you definitely have to have a top 10 defense, yeah, for sure. Like,
yeah,
it's like you can't win MVP and you got a bottom five offense.
Like, yeah, like
I think you got to have a top 10 defense,
lower than a four seed or whatever.
Yeah, like I think you got to have a top 10 defense, but you also have to pass the eye test. Like, just because you have a top 10 defense doesn't necessarily mean, like, hey, this guy's a defensive player. Yeah, I think sometimes that gets skewed at times. Yeah. But like I said in my press conference the other day, I think there's no debate through 34 games, which was what I had played before I got hurt. We were 28-6. Through 34 games played, I don't think there was any secret that I had to solidify.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. To follow that, I don't see who solidified themselves since then. And so my thing is, if nobody solidified themselves in these 34 games since I went out, and I have had it solidified 34 games in, then how can I not still go on to be the Defensive Player of the Year? Because I didn't play enough games? Because I'm going to end up playing 48 games, I think. I've seen people win it and play 50 and 51 and 52. So am I two games short of being able to win it? Like, I think it's been proven, you know, what my defense does for a team. But if I win it this year, great. If not, whatever.
If I didn't win the MVP last year, missing 20 games, you can't win Defensive Player of the Year either.
That's true. But the only thing is, where they going at you at, is they're really counting against you your prior history. Because missing 20 games is not, like, I don't know. Most guys only going to play a max of 70 anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
And so missing 20 games is really not that much. I think what they was counting against you was your past history. So they could say, oh, but he's always hurt, right? And you, the reality is, you haven't been hurt like that in 5 years.
Yeah,
I agree. But you know how it goes. These narratives take on a life of their own, and then that's just kind of what it is.
Yeah, but I do agree with you. But yeah, you definitely got to pass the eye test, and you know, obviously, you guys' defense is the freaking best in the league. So I guess it's not up to us; it's up to the voters.
That's a fact.
To go I want to mention something. Like, to me, it's like, yo, like, I don't understand how you can be a defensive player of the year if you don't carry at least top 5 or top 10 defensive team in the league. That doesn't, that would not, to me, that would not make sense. Like, even me, like, I feel like I've gotten so good offensively that, you know, people forget about the defensive side. Like, absolutely. I still, like, yeah, sure, like, it's hard to, like, play, you know, freaking 36 minutes every night and do everything offensively and defensively. Like, I'm going to have my moments where, we all have, like, moments where, like, you're going to slip up here and there and all that stuff. But, like, even in those conversations, like, I hate, like, going, like, when I started in the league, my first goal, I was like, I want to win Defensive Player of the Year. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. I never cared about MVP and all that stuff. And I was always like, I got to win Defensive Player of the Year. But I just hate that because my offensive game has, you know, gotten to another level. They just forget that, you know, I'm still right there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, still carrying a top 10 defensive team, you know, averaging, you know, 1.1 still or whatever, 1.5 blocks. Like, it's just annoying to me. But then again, gotta control what you can.
And absolutely,
you know, if you win enough, then you're gonna get your respect. So it's all about winning.
Absolutely, man. Last question before I let you go. And also paying homage to one of the guys who come before you from your homeland, Hakeem Olajuwon. I know coming into the league, you would always say, like, you wanted to pattern your game after Hakeem Olajuwon. No disrespect to the great Hakeem the Dream, because he is incredible. But I think with the way you've expanded your game, to just say it's Hakeem Olajuwon, I think it's not quite accurate. Now, granted, you do have some dream in you. You got the shake, the footwork, all, you know, the midi, all of the stuff that the Dream had. But, like, the way you push the ball in transition, the way you shooting the three, the way you mixing the guy's step back three, that's different to me. And so I just wanted to ask, for you, in your mind, is it still Hakeem for you, or has that expanded?
Man, it's expanded to everybody. I'm a willing learner, and I want to learn everything. You know, to give you an example, you know, my first 2 years in the playoffs, I really struggled because I was just a post player. It was easy to double me. I couldn't shoot off the dribble and all that stuff. So me and Drew Handler, my trainer, we were like, we got to figure that out. Like, I can't be easily guarded. So we had to find ways out to, like, add, you know, something new to my game. That's when we started watching, you know, whether it was Kobe, like KD, you know, like Dirk and all that stuff. Like, basically any legends that has come to the game and that, you know, had whatever particular move that they added to the game that everybody uses. So we were like, that's what we walked on. We were like, I got to be unpredictable. Like people can't know that I'm just going to post up. I got to be able to take the ball, push it in transition, do a hazy pull up like KD or fade away like Kobe or MJ. Like, so we just decided that, like, we needed to expand the game, my game. And yeah, but to answer your question, yeah, at this point, like, it's not a game. It's a bunch of, you know, a lot of superstars that have come in to the game and all that stuff. And we had this conversation at All-Star. Obviously, you know how I feel about, you know, old school players and, you know, how they're being rated and all that stuff. So I don't even want to, you don't even want to get me started on that. Because I mean, can you imagine, you know, the skill level that we have nowadays, or let's say me doing that back in the freaking 60s, that would have probably put me in jail.
Absolutely.
Or I would have been the greatest player ever. Like,
absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy. And we had that conversation, and sometimes it just pisses me off.
Hey, man, if anybody get it, I get it. The skill level today is like so far ahead of what it was back then, which is why I don't understand the whole NBA 75 list.
I don't understand it either. I mean, there were some names on it. I'm like they put the highlight on it. I'm like, you know, I watched someone dribble like one hand. And I'm like, yo, like, this is crazy. Like, I'm way better than this. So I don't know what you guys are saying yet. I don't have the resume yet. I don't have that, but when you talk about the skill level and, like, if I'm actually better than a lot of those guys, then I don't know. Like, and if you don't agree, then we can't talk basketball, because the skill level nowadays compared to, you know, back in the day, I don't know. Like, they would have probably shot us back then if we were doing all this stuff.
Absolutely. It's crazy, man. It's impossible that you can say some of those guys on that list are part of the 75 best players to play in this. Like, come on, man. Something is off with that list.
No disrespect. I respect all the accomplishments and stuff, but, you know, when...
Absolutely. You know,
that's another conversation for another day, but there's a lot of names on that list where I'm like, I don't know what you guys talking about, but there's no way.
But stop it. Like, stop. Hey, man. JoJo, brother, I in my heart believe you going to be on the 100. I don't know how they're going to be able to deny you that. I hope so, man. We'll see.
You're going to be too. Hey, you got a resume, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, brother. But I will tell you this before we go. I'm also not sure how they're going to deny you MVP. And like I said, that's no disrespect to Joker, who is incredible. That's no disrespect to any other guys that's in the running. You know, DeMar has been incredible. Ja Morant has been incredible. Like, I think there are guys who are definitely deserving to be in that conversation. But with what y'all team dealt with this year, for you to keep that team right up there, the one seed most of the year, two seed, for you to do that, missing an all-star, like, it wasn't like the trade happened right away and there was another all-star there. You missed an all-star for 60 games. And to still carry that team the way you did with guys in and out of the lineup, I don't know what else you got to do, my brother.
I don't know either, but, you know, like you said, there's a lot of guys, you know, that can be mentioned. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for all of them, especially Jokic, because I'm so happy that, you know, bigs are taking over and all that stuff. So
European bigs, not to be mixed up with your American bigs. European bigs.
whatever happens, happens. If I win it, great. You know, if it does, I mean, it's whatever. So,
hey, listen. Listen, y'all, JoJo is going for the European bigs, for the African bigs, and for Giannis, the African descent European big. That's who we rolling with. My brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. As I said, I could do this for another 2 hours. Thank you so much for taking the time, bro. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
We
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.